It's August 8th, 2011, and this is The Hell Yeah Show.
And hello and welcome to The Hell Yeah Show, episode 2. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we're bringing you tech news, tech discussion, how-to tips, how to live your life better, how to not fail at technology. This is The Hell Yeah Show. And we've got a lot to talk about today, mostly because we didn't talk about everything we wanted to talk about last episode.
Yeah, I run off at the mouth a little bit.
Yep, but that is to be expected on this show, since we are not trying to keep things moving at a brisk pace. We're mostly trying to stop and discuss things and have fun with it. So in that vein, later this show coming up, we'll have a hopefully fruitful discussion of an episode of Star Trek, a new feature now. It's already the second show, and we're introducing new features. We're going to discuss Star Trek Next Generation, Season 2, Episode 1.
Why did you want to start with Season 2, though?
So a lot of people say, and I can kind of confirm this, that Season 1 is a little rocky, that they were kind of still getting used to their roles in Season 1.
The uniforms didn't quite fit right.
The uniforms, a little bit of looseness here, a little bit of tightness there. By Season 2, they kind of had things figured out.
All right.
So the idea is, by starting with Season 2, since that the whole series, really, there's no major continuity points. Like, it's not a whole, you know, cliffhanger at the end of, you know, one season into the next season, or cliffhanger at the end of one episode into the next episode. So you can really just pick up any episode at any time.
That's true.
So why not start with Season 2?
That's actually really nice, too, because then you can just kind of hop in and get new viewers that way, or especially something like Netflix, because I guess you were saying that they just released all of these, like the original series and the Next Generation, and what else, Voyager?
So yeah, so this is the whole impetus for this project, of us discussing Star Trek, is that you can now get every episode of Voyager, the original series, and Next Generation, and possibly Enterprise and Deep Space Nine as well, but I didn't check for those because really, why would you ever want to go searching for those?
You know what? Just so I can interject here, I do have to say that Star Trek Enterprise is very underrated. It was actually a pretty good show. The problem is that it's very difficult to make it through the opening credits and take it seriously. It's like it has the worst opening sequence of any Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, Next Generation is my hands down favorite, and I haven't actually watched that much of it. I've watched maybe a season's worth of episodes from scattered across various seasons. So I'd be down for looking at it critically and really diving into Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Yep. So anyway, so that's coming up later on the show. But for the time being, speaking of Netflix and the wonders of Netflix instant streaming combined with Star Trek, we've got a bit of an old news item here. You may remember a few weeks ago, Netflix raised or lowered their prices, depending on how you look at it. The idea is that they used to have an old plan that was $9.99 a month for unlimited streaming and one disc out at a time, sort of unlimited discs, depending on how quickly you can watch movies. But $9.99 a month for one disc out at a time and unlimited streaming. Now they have forked that out into two separate plans. We've got $7.99 a month for unlimited streaming, $7.99 a month for unlimited DVDs, one disc out at a time. Combined, that is $15.98 a month for unlimited everything. So what used to cost $9.99 now costs $15.98. The idea here is that they have a lot of people who just want to use discs. They have a lot of people who just want to use streaming. Why don't we let each of those groups pay less money? And then also at the same time, they can each pay for their own costs, and it's all the costs are apportioned correctly, whereas the $9.99 wasn't a good reflection of that.
Do you think that there were a lot of households where someone had, like, say, the DVD part that they liked, and then they let somebody else use the streaming?
So I think there's a lot of households where they – kind of like that, yeah, where – one person or multiple people heavily used the streaming,
yeah,
and the DVD part got very occasionally used, just as kind of a, you know, as a once in a while type thing.
Sure.
But also I do agree that maybe it's, you know, you've got a family where the kids are very happy to, you know, stream the internet or stream Netflix online on all of their various electronic devices, while the parents are more used to DVDs. I can certainly see that picture as well.
Yeah, I mean, we were using Netflix for a while, and specifically, my wife sometimes gets movies and stuff for, you know, either she does a lot of teaching, and so sometimes she'll want to get a clip from a movie or from a show that we can't get anywhere else, or that we don't own, or, you know, we can't get at the Redbox at the convenience store or something like that.
Oh, you guys actually use Redbox?
No, never. But it's there. Oh, okay. And if I was going to, it's close. It's like a block away. But
because the thing is, I don't know anybody that actually uses Redbox. I don't think I've ever met a Redbox user.
I see people using it all the time.
Oh, no, I see them. I just don't know them.
Oh, yeah. Well, who would want to? I mean.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like,
but my dad recently for Christmas last year, was it Christmas? Yeah. One of my sisters got him a Blu-ray player, and he promptly hooked it up to the, you know, 14-inch television in the living room upstairs, because he has a big screen down in the basement, but he doesn't watch TV down there, you know? So he's got this Blu-ray player hooked up to this super tiny television in his living room.
Is it a CRT?
No, not anymore.
That'd be great. It's like this old standard definition television.
Yeah, two years ago it was. But the my dad is, he sticks to a certain technology for quite a while. He has, like, in the basement, the big screen down there is like a, Gen 1 DLP that he's had for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's had it forever. Yeah. And so him moving to a Blu-ray player was pretty cool. But the reason my sister got it for him was not so that he would promptly go out and buy all Blu-ray movies, because that's just not his thing, but specifically for the Netflix side. And, you know, now I'd probably just give him an Apple TV, right? But which I'll get to that in a moment. But the trick was, he didn't have a way to get it online because it didn't have wireless, and his wireless kind of stinks at the house, and he didn't really know how to hook it up. So for Father's Day, we got him an Airport Express, and I bought it and I opened it up, and I configured the entire thing, and I put a little note in there saying, you know, Happy Father's Day from all of us, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you flip the little card over, there's like a little arrow, and you flip the card over, and it's like, everything's good to go. Just plug in, you know, get an Ethernet cable into the, and it'll all work, because I had all of his wireless stuff on my laptop still from the last time I was there, which is another great thing about the OS X keychain, right? So I was able to actually, you know, redo this from scratch, and I shipped it out, and he called me so that I could help him configure it. And I was like, oh, you're in luck. You know, you have to read that card. You know, all you have to do is plug it in, it's ready to go. And he's like, I didn't turn the card over. So he got it, and then went to the Apple website and reset it to factory defaults got messed up and like hung up on trying to configure it. It was a very disappointing Father's Day for me. You know, I looked up to this man for years and can't even turn a card over. But he's delighted with it. He loves the Netflix streaming and he likes that service a lot. And, you know, I am a pretty big fan of it myself, with a couple of major issues. One being, I think it's stupid. Like, just absolutely over-the-top stupid that I can't use it on a PlayStation 3 without also logging into the PlayStation Network. So when, you know, Commander D-Bag had PlayStation Network taken down for days and days and days, and then they weren't there, I couldn't use my Netflix thing. Like, every time I went to go use it, it was like, you know, I can't log into the PlayStation Network. And I think it's a really dumb idea to require it, but what are you going to do?
Do you have the DVD that they used to send out, or Blu-ray disc they used to send out? That that you watch Netflix from?
I think so, but I think whenever I run that disc, it would just say like there's a software update. You have to go blah.
Okay. Because I was wondering if you use that to use it without logged into PlayStation Network. But that's very odd, because on Xbox I can understand it. On Xbox, being able to use Netflix, even if you're paying for a Netflix account, being able to use it on Xbox is actually part of Xbox Live Gold, which you pay $60 a year for. Huh. But on PlayStation, it's completely free. So that is odd, definitely.
Well, yeah, it's everything, I guess, that you can run on a PlayStation 3 that uses the network for whatever reason requires you to have a PSN account. So, like, even if my wife logs in with her profile on the PS3, she doesn't have a PlayStation account, so she can't play Netflix on it, which is also stupid.
Hmm. It must be part of Sony's their very dumb. Advanced security protocols, right?
No, Sony's just stupid. They don't understand. They were still making a mini disc player until 2 weeks ago.
No way.
Yeah, they just they've retired the mini disc like 2 weeks ago.
Actually, at the radio station where I volunteer, we had an old mini disc recorder, and we were in the process of putting all our old radio equipment that we weren't using anymore up for sale on eBay.
Do you have cart players?
We've got all sorts of old like Ampex reel-to-reel recorders. That's and awesome. Crazy stuff. Yeah, but this mini disc player or mini disc recorder, not only did it go for like $150, but the guy who I sold it to was ecstatic to receive it. It was just, amazed that this mini disc player was in such great condition.
Send me his email address. I got all kinds of mini disc crap I can sell him.
I got this very nice note from him that was like, "These are so hard to find. You know, new in box. This is so great. Thank you very much." And he left us like the A++++ rating or whatever.
Yeah, eBay has really eBay has done a lot to really encourage grade inflation.
Yeah, anything below an A++++ is really pretty lacking on eBay.
That's actually my wife's joke, because she sent me a text message last week at some point, and I don't remember what it was, but my reply to her was A++++, best wife ever, would marry again.
Yeah, very good. So the whole point behind this, behind talking about this Netflix price hike, because this is kind of old news, but I was proposing the idea that you really don't need cable television anymore. For most applications. There are people out there that get very into, the History Channel, which you can't get online yet, although you can get old episodes from it online pretty easily.
Sure. Specials.
There are people, I guess a better example is maybe Speed Network, if people are really into car racing.
Well, those guys don't have internet anyways.
Right.
goes our NASCAR sponsorship. I'm sorry.
My point is that most of the central things that are desirable about having cable TV can actually be found online fairly easily and fairly cheaply now. And that this $15.98 a month for Netflix, still a pretty good deal, despite it kind of doubling in price there. I'm still plenty willing to pay that instead of subscribing to cable TV.
Yeah, we dropped the mailing discs thing. We sent back the last DVD we had, which was Network. And we sent that back, and then I believe it's getting canceled on the disc side. And we're going to let the streaming go for a while and see how we like it.
Well, now that Star Trek is on streaming, that really pays for itself. I would pay $7.99 a month just to watch Star Trek. So that's a win-win for me.
Yeah.
My point is, Netflix is good. Netflix, Hulu, sports especially. I don't know whether you follow baseball or cycling.
No.
But those two sports are very accessible online now. I was super impressed by this Tour de France All Access Pass that I was able to buy this summer, where I could watch all of the Tour de France online, and as opposed to on Versus TV, which is now, I think, NBC Sports, something like that.
Now, how did they do the streaming? Was it like a captive website thing, or did they have like a could you like stream it in QuickTime, for example, or did you have to go to their website?
So they made it seem like you had to go to their website, but they had an iPad app too, which tells you there's clearly a QuickTime stream
somewhere
back there somewhere. Yeah. So on their website, it was either in Flash or Silverlight. I forget which one. But then you could get an iPad app, and there was a big stink. So when they initially released the iPad app, they allowed you to watch live stages, but they didn't allow you to go back and watch previous stages, which you can in the web client. So people who were buying the iPad app, and it's a separate subscription for the iPad app. They haven't quite figured out how to do this right yet.
Okay.
Part of it was they were using the account system of MapMyRide.com, which is a sort of cycling, GPS tracking, route tracking website.
Okay.
So they were using their account system, and it was, Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were sponsoring the whole service or making it possible or whatever. So they were using their account system, which kind of messed things up. And but the streaming was actually really good. It was dynamically switching between different different bandwidth modes as my connection wavered because I'm on a terrible internet connection. And it was actually doing a pretty good job of it. And the player itself was solid. But in the iPad app, they wouldn't let you go back and watch these previous stages. So everybody made a big stink about this, and they actually were really responsive and released an update that its process for letting you go back and watch previous stages was that it launched a Safari session and directed you to some back-end page that had a drop-down box where you select the stage you want to watch, and then it just gives you, you know, a QuickTime stream of stage.
That's pretty awesome. Like it's not as sexy as it could be, and that's fine and that's great. But being able to just pick exactly like what part you want to watch and then monitor it, I think having like that internet real time camera type aspect is pretty cool in a sporting event like that, where you have like a really long track with a lot of competition, like, you know, marathons and bicycle races. I think are really good for that. It's not so hot for like, you know, a game you play on a field probably, but
right. Yeah, and I give them credit because they actually tried to kind of make it more internet-y than just here's a stream. They actually let you go through and bookmark your sort of favorite moments and share them with friends or share them on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And I guess I'm not quite into cycling enough to really want to broadcast my favorite moments of the stages of the Tour de France.
Yeah.
But I can certainly see... Or I could certainly imagine there are people out there where that would be a valuable feature. But I just give them credit overall for a good web experience that was actually probably more satisfactory than the television experience because there were no commercials, which was pretty excellent, especially watching the archive stages.
Now, was this like
much faster?
Was this like satellite feed style? Like, was it for, I mean, is it kind of like the outtakes reel for like the, for the broadcasters that are covering the event? Because you know how like on the old analog SAT system, you can watch the network feed. So if you're like,
that's the part that was a little disappointing about the web stream compared to the television stream is you don't necessarily get all of the in studio. They're, you know, making their predictions before the stage. They're doing the pre and post stage wrap ups and all this stuff. You didn't necessarily get all of that because it was kind of just the more raw feed aspect to watching it.
Okay.
Yeah. But that combined with MLB TV, which is, in my opinion, another very good implementation of bringing sports online, although their Mac client is severely lacking. It launches a Java-based HTTP server and runs that constantly. You are not, you heard me right. So it launches a Java applet that is basically serving up pages.
Who does
HTTP
this?
Pages. let me see. I think it's, so they have two versions. You can just view normal feeds in browser. But then if you want HD, there's a, I think it's called Turbo HD.
I think it's like some dopey peer-to-peer thing.
It's terrible. The technology is called Autobahn, I think. But so basically there's a jar file that you can actually just launch manually from a terminal and then just leave that running. And then you go to the website and go to Turbo HD and it works. But yeah, the Mac client is lacking. Because if you don't do that, then it's using up like 40% of your CPU at times trying to serve up, trying to run a web server in Java. Which is fantastic. So yeah, you can get around it, but again, like it's another case of they did some things very right. You can go back and you can watch any game from any team for the entire season at any point, and that is amazing. But while they did that very well, their technology on the actually watching it side is a bit lacking.
Now, if you're watching baseball in high definition, can you actually see the tears rolling down the faces of the Red Sox fans?
It's only in Turbo HD. Only when you've Only we've got Autobahn up and running, and you've got your Java web server working.
You better get that jar file then.
can those tears be visible? Yeah.
That was one of the worst things about living in Rhode Island was Red Sox fans. they're terrible people.
Yep. All right. So, and then the other thing would be Hulu, which I used to watch all the time. I have not paid any attention to it as of late.
You know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to pay the money every month to watch ads for the same goddamn car over and over and over again. And then the same washing machine over and over again. It's stupid.
Oh, that's the other thing about MLB TV. This season, they just started running ads, or it may have been last season, at the end of last season, they started running ads in between the innings, which is actually, I don't mind so much if it's live because there's nothing going on anyway in between innings. But when you're watching a recorded game, you really kind of just want it to skip to the next inning. So running ads in between them is a little odd, especially on a paid service. And that's like $110 a year to subscribe to MLB TV. So that was a little odd, but you can actually, if you just, add an alias to your local host in your host file, for the company that serves up those advertisements, it'll just skip right over.
Now, so for people that don't have thick, luxurious neck beards like us, what we're talking about is, in the, your computer has something that's called a host file, and it's basically a flat text file, and it will have some IP addresses and some host names in it. And, it's there as kind of a backup. You know how if you go to a website in your browser, you type in, you know, show.hellyeah.com, for example, and then it goes out and talks to what's called a DNS server in order to get kind of like a phone book style lookup request. So it's like, I need to go to this address. How do I get there? And then the server says, oh, it's here. And it gives you back this numeric address. So when you're fiddling around inside your own host file, what you're actually doing is you're able to circumvent... To quote Joe from Arrested Development, you're going to circumvent the DNS system and tell it specifically that instead of going to the actual site, you want to go to, say, loopback, like the 127.0.0.1, which is your own computer. And so some people do that for like blocking ad networks and things like that. And I guess it works for this, too. That's kind of it's an interesting tactic.
It's great. As soon as it realizes it can't contact the ad server, it skips right over it. So it works out quite well. Anyway, so that is, I think that's Netflix price hike and also just general conversation about cutting your cable.
Well, what do you think is going to happen with Amazon? Do you think they're going to get, like, the Amazon Prime streaming stuff? Does that, how does that weigh
in? So that's weird to me. That's really weird.
Now, before you proceed, I want to tell you that one of our dozen listeners... is an Amazon employee, and I actually haven't talked to him about this in particular, but and I don't think he actually would really know necessarily the answer to that, but I don't even know what their real roadmap is. Like, I know, you know, I get the service and I know they've got the infrastructure for it clearly, so what is their, do they want to compete with Hulu, or are they gonna just outright, like, do they want to go after the same content licensing that Hulu has, or I don't know. I would love to have an IP-based television solution, and I would like to kind of have my networks a la carte, because the only reason I have cable television right now, and to be honest, if I watch live television, I prefer to watch it over an antenna, because my HD service is great, and the HD looks better over the air than it does over the cable connection I get from Mediacom, who is just a terrible operator. But my internet service from them is pretty good, but... if I cancel my TV service, then I have to pay like more money each month. So since they're able to package it together, but see, and I think it's a fairly common practice, right? Like, if I drop cable TV, I have to pay not only exactly what I'm paying now, but I got to pay another $10 on top of that.
Right. So the whole Amazon thing is a little bizarre to me, and I don't think they're going after that use case necessarily. I think they're going more after the sort of Netflix use case, or really the, I'm looking for a DVD set or a movie on Amazon and, oh, hey, I could just watch it online instead of having to order it, type of use case. But the combination of unlimited streaming and 2-day shipping is really bizarre to me. That the package deal there is just doesn't quite compute.
Well, you know, they include the streaming for free if you have a Prime account.
Right. Yeah.
Which
I do because I've got an Amazon student account actually.
Ah, there you go.
Which was free.
Yeah.
I'm completely appreciative of the fact that they threw in unlimited instant streaming for free. It's just I was not expecting it, and I've really, you know, that's not what I signed up for.
Yeah, I think you should check it out though. I have high hopes for it. I think. You know they're not the sexiest player there, but what they've got works, right?
Yeah. And so the weird thing though is if you look on Amazon, there's actually a decent number of titles, especially movies, more obscure movies that are available for instant streaming, but not part of the whole Prime package. So you can rent them separately, which is a little odd or a little frustrating, and it's the type of thing that if they had offered a separate streaming package rather than attaching it to Amazon Prime, maybe that stuff would have been included in that package.
That's not necessarily their fault though, you know, like the copyright holders and the content licensees and all that crap, like that's no joke, like being able to navigate that, like anyone that actually has the balls to sit down and try to go through a content licensing agreement with a TV or movie studio, they, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they walk on water.
Yeah, certainly. All right. So let's see. We're about half an hour into the show, so we're doing well. We're actually moving along better than last show. Yeah. We're getting the hang of this.
You know, sorry I didn't have much to contribute to the sports side. I mean, I'm not really a huge sports fan. I enjoy watching games in person sometimes, but I don't like Major League Baseball. I don't like the NFL. I love to watch, you know, college and high school games in person. And I like, you know, friendly neighborhood games. I like watching that or going to one of those. But, you know, I have a hard time. I have a hard time getting excited for a bunch of millionaires beating on each other and then complaining about it later.
Well, I think the whole sports question is going to be, I think, a pretty fundamental question for online content providers or trying to replace cable TV. Yeah. Because sports is so much of what cable TV provides.
Well, the DirecTV too, like the satellite providers also have like huge packages for it, like that NFL Sunday Ticket thing. I know that's like a really big deal to DirecTV people. Like people that have DirecTV and are big NFL fans, like that is why they have a satellite dish. Like it's so they can watch, you know, 25 games at the same time.
Yeah. And I almost pondered subscribing to XM Radio just to get live baseball coverage again, but then MLB TV came along. So anyway, all right. So cutting the cable, I'm all in favor of it. I think you should do it right now.
Yeah,
it'll be cheaper, and I think it'll be more less advertisements in your life and more great content.
You know, I would like to see that, but what I really want though is I want an appliance like a TiVo that can sit in my house and just pull crap from the internet that I can license. Like I want to be able to subscribe to a couple of shows from Showtime. I want to be able to watch Weeds and Dexter, and I want to be able to watch what's the other one I like? Nurse Jackie, and then United States of Terror was good, but that just finished. Like I'd like to be able to subscribe to shows ad hoc and pay for the annual subscription and have them just get delivered to a device in my house so that I can watch them whenever I'm good and ready.
It sounds like you're describing the iTunes store, right? That's their model.
Well, I like that model, but the content's not there for me.
Right. Yeah.
That's the only thing. And like, you know, if that got resolved, and they were able to get all the stuff that I like, then I would absolutely be happy with that. And I would run out and get myself a new Apple TV and be happy. But I haven't. And
I think the iTunes store price point is a little high, especially when you're watching the whole idea of like, you watch one episode of a TV show and then you want to watch the next one and the next one. I did that with Battlestar Galactica on the iTunes store when TV shows first came out.
Yeah.
It's like I'm paying $1.99 for each one of these episodes. And
Yeah, but now you can go back and you can watch them again, right? Like, they just released that last week where now you can get stuff that you've purchased from iTunes Music Store for, like, TV. Like, you can go back and get them. Anything that you've bought before, you can rewatch now. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that, with the exception of maybe Arrested Development, Star Trek, and a few others, I'm not that interested in going back and rewatching television.
Oh, see,
content.
I am. I have shows.
Oh, really?
I have shows that I watch all the time. Like Arrested Development, Seinfeld, even Frasier.
Okay. Else?
Like, I watch a lot of shows like that. And
no, Liz, you're right. You're right.
My wife also, like, she studies TV and media and movies. So a lot of the stuff that she does, like, when she's working on, I mean, she's in a book about Lost, for example. Like, she wrote a chapter for this book, and she's watched all of Lost at least three times all the way through. And she would probably go back and watch it again. You know what I mean? Like, she likes to watch a show in serial like that. She likes to do the whole thing all at once.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. And you mentioned Seinfeld and Frasier, and actually those are two shows that I will go back and watch. You're right about that.
Yeah. Season 11 for Frasier, by the way.
There's a season 11 of Frasier?
Isn't there? Hold on. Let me go look. but you know, Apple, which brings us to another item on the agenda, right, is the Apple store and the physical brick and mortar stores. And you had some observation about people, like, unlikely customers. And I haven't noticed this myself, but I don't have an Apple store near me anymore. When I was in Rhode Island, I was inside the Apple store all the time because there was one at Providence Place Mall. And I bought a lot of things there. Like, I got an iMac there. Liz got an iMac there. But the nearest Apple store for me is about an hour and a half away. And I will go visit if I'm in town. But I don't go there on a regular basis. So what is this like...
So I'll introduce this next topic then. So the thought here, I have made two visits to the Apple Store in the past month or so. The first of which was to help a couple family members buy their first iPhones. And the second of which was to get some repair work, or actually they ended up replacing my current iPhone. And both times I noticed a significant difference from what I remember the Apple Store to be. And probably part of it is kind of me looking back on the rosy past of when I was, an intense Apple nerd. But still, it seems like with the release of the iPad and with the distribution of Apple products to people that aren't that, what used to be the very core Apple nut demographic, as other demographics enter the equation, the Apple Store itself has undergone a really weird culture shift. It used to have this sense that it was kind of a hip mecca for great design and really geeky people that really cared about the best technology and really wanted their stuff to work well. And the whole store was engineered around making sure that you had the best experience possible and that all your gadgets work well together and that they were there every step of the way to help you with that if something wasn't working right.
Yeah.
What it's turned into is that's still the philosophy, but the people who are taking advantage of that philosophy have absolutely no clue how to do things on their own. So the store has become a sort of like a help desk,
thank God none of these elderly people have ever had to zap their PRAM, right?
right. So it's chaperoning all of these less clueful demographics through the Apple purchasing and using experience.
I can't find the buttons on my iPad. Where are the buttons?
And the result is actually a combination of two things. First of all, there's a lot of 50-year-olds picking up iPads and learning how to use their iPad for the first time and how to set up and how to type their password.
The people that are 50 years old in an Apple store today are old enough that they have probably, when they were an undergrad, used a computer with punch cards. And I'm not BSing you about that. That is that particular age group. They have been able to see that technology change in a way that certainly you have not, because you are so young, and even me being somewhat in between. That is a huge leap in the span of 30 years. Yeah. Like, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like for me when I'm 50, but.
Oh, certainly. And I'm not, it's not these people's fault. It's not this sort of extending of the demographics. It's not that the people who've come to the Apple ecosystem as a result of this demographic expansion, it's not their fault. It's the fault of, in my opinion, the Apple ecosystem has sort of failed to it's been quite successful in catering to these people, and as a result it's kind of failed to continue to cater to what used to be its base.
I'll hear you, but I disagree.
Okay, and remember, I'm talking only about the Apple Store. I'm not talking about Apple products in general. I'm talking about the employees of the Apple Store.
All right.
Because now you have... okay, so I was helping two people buy their iPhones, and the process was... Well, first of all, the process took like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, over which, or through the course of which, they attempted to activate, I think, 3 different iPhones. They could not communicate with the, or they could not do whatever was necessary to get the AT&T stuff to sync up with the iPhone. The employee clearly had no idea what was actually going on when the iPhone was communicating with the AT&T servers and setting itself up and whatnot. The difference between that and a few years ago, where you'd go in and the employee would know everything, would just be, you know, way better than you at Apple products, to the point where they could solve any problem you had, and they actually felt like a genius. I think it's changed to the point where they've focused more on the scenarios where, you know, they're helping the person learn what an iTunes account is. They're helping the person type in their password for the first time. They're helping all of because you can't, you can only spend so much time training someone. And if those become the main use cases, they're going to focus on training people for those use cases. That's and true. As a result, those geniuses are no longer going to know, you know, how to troubleshoot a Mac from the terminal, or how to actually do something meaningful to fix a difficult problem, because they're so focused on helping someone understand what an external hard drive is.
That's true. I can appreciate that a little bit. I have seen somewhat of a change, and I know there was a time where I'd walk into an Apple store and I'd actually be like, I could be blown away, and there'd be a question that I had that had always bugged me or something, and someone would be able to look it up. Or, you know, like, I'm that guy that, like, smugly, like, doesn't need any help in an Apple store. So if I'm looking for, like, the adapter, I can't remember what this was. I think it was a, I think I was buying a power adapter for a MacBook Pro a few years ago. And, it was for a MacBook Air. And it was for the Rev A. And I walked in and I picked up a power adapter, and he said, the guy, stopped me on my way to find someone with one of the little checkout things, which I love that they can check you out from anywhere in the store. But he said,
yes.
He's like, so how do you like your MacBook Pro? And I was like, oh, I love it. This is actually for my Air. And he's like, oh, you might have a problem with that then. And I was like, pardon me? And he said, this was back when the MacBook Air had to have the power adapter that had like the L shape to it, because it was so low to the surface that if you used a regular MagSafe adapter, it would wobble. Like, you couldn't have the MacBook Air flat on a surface and have it plugged into a MagSafe connector. This guy from across the store eyeballed me with the wrong power adapter.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty amazing. I was like, that's, you know, way to go. Good catch.
Yeah.
Like, yep. that would have been a long drive back for me to hold my hat in my hand.
Yep, definitely. All right, so before we wind up here, do we want to talk about Next Generation Season 2, Episode 1 a little bit?
You know, so I love a good Deanna Troi episode, and the reason that I like Deanna Troi so much is because they usually have her wearing, like, some ridiculous, like, unitard thing, and she's walking around with this magnificent camel toe. Like, most episodes with Deanna Troi, have her wearing something really inappropriate. And it's gotten to the point where it's like this inside joke. Like if I'm watching an episode, like my wife will come in and we all like to make cracks about it and make jokes because she's kind of like, you know, an empath. She gets inside your head and she's like, you know, wondering why everyone's thinking of camels. I don't know. Like I can never really take her super seriously, and I have a hard time, you know, not laughing whenever there's a scene with her like leaving or entering a room. And I know it's stupid and juvenile, but I can't help it. Next time you watch it, if you keep an eye out for it, you won't be able to avoid it. But
I think her character in general is somewhat lacking, and that's probably why neither of us really like this episode all that much.
Yeah, I mean,
it's one of the reasons.
Yeah, she's like asleep in her quarters, and then like this alien light comes in and knocks her up. The worst part about the episode, in my opinion, is when her and the doctor are in the what is it, like the little meeting room off the bridge, and all the men in the room are like, you know, really, you know, judging her and like talking down to her like she's not even there, like, well, how'd you go out and get pregnant? And like and it was really stupid because like all these dudes were like, especially Riker. What a jackass I am. I know too much about this show. But so like who she has like this somewhat love interest, right? And this guy is like, you know, how, you know, what have, who have you been seeing, like, you know what I mean? Like it's really like possessive nonsense. Like, you know, obviously like if they were really seeing each other and if she wanted him to know anything about someone else that she was being involved with, like he would know. But like right, an alien right. being knocks her up, and then all of a sudden, you know, she's a harlot. that was my read on it. Like that entire scene, I was just like, everyone was basically telling her that she's a whore for getting knocked up by an alien in the middle of the night when she couldn't do anything about it. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, like from my perspective, she was like, you know, assaulted essentially.
Sure.
So everyone is like monumentally unsympathetic to this, and I thought that was really obnoxious, but yeah, what are you gonna do? Like, science fiction writers are not gender normativity, and these are not things that the writers of Star Trek spent a lot of time worrying about.
So this that part did bug me, but actually the part that bugged me the most about this episode was the tough decision never really had to be made. There was no tough. The decision was kind of just made for everyone when. The kid, the quote-unquote kid, let himself die.
Yeah.
It seems like there should have been some decision point where they've had to actually make a tough choice between this kid's well-being and the ship's well-being. And knowing full well that this kid was not a normal kid. But that never really came to fruition. Instead, everything just kind of resolved itself toward the end. Which went along well with the bizarre Whoopi Goldberg cameo, and
well, it's not a cameo. She's a character on the show, right?
Is she really?
Yeah.
She plays a bartender.
Spoiler alert!
I thought that only happened once in a long while.
No, I'm pretty sure that she's a regular. If I remember correctly, she runs 10 Forward. Like that's.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. All right. I saw in the credits as like and featuring Whoopi Goldberg as though it was some special thing, but
no, I think sorry for my phone there. I think that they may have like recently introduced her at second season, huh. And maybe, you know, we're trying it out and see how people went or see how people liked it. But yeah, she's in several episodes. I wouldn't call it a cameo. I don't know what constitutes a cameo and what constitutes guest star versus cast or who knows.
Anyway, so. But she's there to solve everyone's problems.
Yeah.
So it just seemed too easy to me. It seemed like there should have been season two, episode two, which I watched directly after this, does a much better job at presenting a difficult problem and actually letting them solve through it rather than resolving it for the characters. And that's what I really enjoy about Next Generation. The episodes that I've seen, the ones that I really liked, are the ones where they have to work through a difficult problem using mostly their own logical capabilities.
But without the aid of Spock.
I took a few. Without the aid of Spock, yeah.
Which is very, very difficult, yeah.
So I took some notes, first of which is, and I already told you this, but Picard uses the word grand twice in the first 10 minutes.
It's grand.
It's grand.
Grand.
Right up there with make it so.
Make it so.
I thought the Picard and Wesley awkward elevator scene was pretty good.
Yeah, a little weird that he fondled them.
Solid. Yeah.
A little inappropriate.
That makes it a little more awkward.
Yeah.
Yep.
Poor Picard.
There was a decent amount of data bashing this episode.
He corrects the doctor.
Yeah. Well, not only did the doctor mispronounce his name as Data, but the doctor also said, and I quote, Deanna needs the comfort of human touch and not the cold hand of technology.
Hey, I got to tell you, in a cold, dark night, sometimes the cold touch of technology is more than sufficient.
Cold hand of technology.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's that show has, man, you know, it's kind of I was pretty upset at the end of that episode that was the one that you wanted to watch. You know what you should do?
I didn't specifically pick that one out because it was a good episode. I just picked it out because it was season 2, episode 1.
Yeah, I think what we should do sometime is maybe consider doing a Riff Tracks for a couple of Star Trek episodes. I think I could get on board with that.
Yeah, yep. Although we can't, I don't know if we can use the name Riff Tracks. I don't think that's...
I'm sorry.
Public domain.
No. But you, yep. Like a Riff Track. Oh.
We'll call it a track riff. Yeah.
Well, no, but I mean, Riff Tracks is the product, but it is a riff track. I don't know.
Right.
But we'll have to get our crack legal team on it. I mean,
yeah.
All four of those guys are always just hanging out typing away. So.
The Water Walkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and then I love the scene toward the end where Worf says that he'll accept responsibility for tucking Wesley in at night. It's they're going around the room and everyone's
wow.
Everyone's describing the like the various ways in which they're going to help Wesley out now that his mom is no longer on the ship, and they go to Worf and or they need someone to tuck him in at night, and Worf says I'll accept that responsibility. There you go. Yeah. There you go. Very good. Overall though, not a particularly fantastic episode.
Your homework for the week, if I can be so bold, there is a season 11 of Frasier. I was correct. And it's, season 11, episode 11 is one of my favorites. And I think you should watch it because it's brilliant.
What's the title?
I don't want to tell you.
I mean, there's a fairly good chance that I've seen it.
It involves a brownie.
High holidays.
Yeah. That is probably one of the best episodes of Frasier ever, mainly because of Niles in the kitchen saying, I'm especially looking forward to something known as the munchies phase, where I'm told I will enjoy bizarre food combinations. I have a Chilean sea bass and an aggressive Zinfandel.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a great episode also for Martin
go ahead.
I was going to say the dog army is good. Barbecue pudding chips and fridge pants.
I love when Niles opens the brownie and goes, ganja in its purest form.
Yeah.
Solid episode. Solid show in general. Frasier is a must watch.
Yeah. It's pretty hilarious. 11 seasons.
So that was the last season.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. All right. Very good. That I think is probably going to bring Hell Yeah Show episode 2 to a close. If you haven't seen it, go and watch Star Trek Next Generation season 2 episode 1 and tell us if you think it's as bad as we thought it was.
Send us your home screens.
Episode 2. And oh yes, another thing you should do. This is your homework out there.
Yeah.
Watch High Holidays, Frasier season 11 episode 11.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Star Trek Next Generation on Netflix, and then send us a screenshot of your iPhone or other smartphone home screen, and Emery will do some psychoanalysis on you like he did on me.
Yeah, if you go to show.helliga.com, you can see my very insightful commentary on Alan's home screen.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I had you pegged, especially about the Oregon Trail.
Maybe I got you pegged. Yeah. Tossed salad and scrambled eggs.
It's a Frasier reference.
A Frasier reference, yes. Just to make this clear for all of you out there. all right, that will do it for Hell Yeah Show number 2. This is August 8th, 2011. We'll be back next week. We're doing this every Monday now. That is the plan. You should see the episode uploaded Monday nights if everything goes according to plan. Mm-hmm. And if you were actually recording on the other end of this, I don't know what actually happened over there. That'll do it. We'll see you next week, folks. You can email us at show@hellyeah.com.
And I'm our Alan. Website, as always, this is Emery, is show.hellyeah.com.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done there.
See you next week.
I'm Alan.
Right, I'm Emery.
And we'll see you next week.
Really professional.